welcome everyone to this WebSphere Support Technical Exchange session. Today's topic is using WebSphere Extreme Scale with WebSphere Commerce. Today's presenters are Michael Lee, Jim Kruger, and Paul Chen. Michael is an advisory software developer for WebSphere Extreme Scale development. Michael is part of the WebSphere Extreme Scale integration team, focusing on the integration aspects with the WebSphere Commerce server. Jim Kruger is an advisory software engineer and integration lead for WebSphere Extreme Scale development. Jim has over 10 years of development experience at WebSphere Extreme Scale and WebSphere Application Server Technologies. Paul Chen is a senior software developer and integration architect for WebSphere Extreme Scale development. Paul is responsible for focusing on integrating elastic caching technology with other IBM and non-IBM products and middleware applications. He is an IBM master inventor since 2008. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Paul.
Thank you, Dave. So please turn to the page number 2. So today's session will cover two parts, and I will give an introduction of elastic caching technology and its common usage patterns, and then Mike and Jim will cover the details, elastic caching and WebSphere Commerce server integration, the best practice and benefits. So page number 3. So one of the issues in today's enterprise is infrastructure overwhelming. This is due to a large increase of the transactions that are initiated by many different clients. For example, more and more people use laptops, mobile phones, internet, TV, online videos, email, and social websites. This actually introduced huge transactions to the infrastructures, which the enterprise infrastructure may not design to handle such transaction overload. And actually, we call this kind of situation is a flash load. And a typical example of a flash load will actually be like online shopping during the holiday seasons, such as that right before the Christmas time, many people use online websites for browsing store category, search holiday gifts, promotion items, and placeholders. And the flash load could reach a peak that the infrastructure may not be able to handle well. And here is the elastic caching comes into place to help. Page number 4. There are many different ways of caching the data. For example, caching can be on the client applications, like Acme on a client side. You can cache on the client side, or could be on the web server layer, and also or could be on the application or application server layers. And even though that they, sometimes you can even caching the database layer as well, depends on the technology that you've been using. So there's many different ways of caching it. So the purpose of caching is to reduce the application path length so that the data can be retrieved fast. So on page number 5, the elastic caching introducing fourth tier on top of the traditional three-tier application topology that you may be familiar with it, and it is called elastic caching tier. So that layer provides distributed in-memory caching capability and is able to cache data for applications, application servers, and cache the data retrieved even from the backend system such as a database. So different from the local application cache, maybe a lot of application has been using the local cache, or the application maybe they have their own cache to handle it. But different from that, and those local caching coexist on the same application JVM. But elastic caching tier is a remote, and it can be scaled up and down by adding or remove more caching service and share across the applications, so without changing the application itself. So 8 is brings a scalability, availability and of the caching data. So elastic caching also free up the application JVM heap. So heap are left for the application to be used. So make applications behave much healthy and perform better. So page number 6. So why data grid? A typical way of solving the scale issues, for example, on a database, is to add additional database servers. Or upgrade the system hardware on the database server to make the hardware more powerful, more capable of improve the database scalability and performance. However, this approach could be very costly, The reason is that, you know, in order to add an additional database, and you need an extra database license or extra efforts to install, configure additional servers, and also the cost of the hardware that may be expensive. Also, the way of storing the data between the database and the elastic caching is different too. The data in the database usually is normalized. So means that getting the data involves many database tables and colons, access and join, or even, you know, combine with a lot of store procedure within it in order to retrieve a specific data from the database. And so that the response time to access the data from the database is not constant value. So it's not constant, and you cannot very easily predict it, and it will be dependent on the database structures and the number of data stored in the database, and you will get a different response time. So that's the issue for database access. However, elastic caching data we're talking about here and stored data in a grid is denormalized, and it is stored as a key value pairs, and just like the hash map object in Java. And the response time to access data in a grid is constant and is predictable. The reason is hash map access is constant, is a predictable in terms of performance. And the response time will not depend on how much data stored in a grid. And regardless if you have millions of records within the grid as a hash map key values, accessing as individual value key, it's still constant lookup. So it brings the performance to your application when using the grid. So elastic caching also provides the data replication features. So replicate copies of the data can be stored in the grid. In case of a primary key, you know, let's say server is down, and actually the replicate cache the data can be taking place to serve for caching purpose. So this actually provides a fault tolerance and a resilience to the applications without putting extra efforts by users. So you don't have to invest a huge efforts to get that features, but it's just out of the box. Page number 7, please. So as I mentioned earlier, the data in a grid is a key value pairs and is denormalized. So it can retrieve from grid very, very fast. And our testing result shows that the accessing lookup the key from the grid is like less than 1 millisecond, so 1 millisecond. So it's very fast. So another characteristic for of the caching data in the grid is that usually you're caching the transient or referential data. They are read-only or read-mostly data. So means that, you know, one example could be like HTTP sessions that could be put into the grid, or the user profiles. So they are read-only or read-mostly, and it doesn't really involve a lot of invalidation going on. Means that every 1 second, you are going to have to expire the data. Also, the cache data should allow some degree of staleness. For example, like in your cases, if you browse the stock code from your mobile phone, it doesn't have to be exactly the real time. So you don't really care if it's, you know, the stock price shows up on a mobile phone is like 10 minutes earlier. It's not a big deal. So in this case, it's perfect to use for caching and caching for 10 minutes for the stock code, so you can actually look up the stock code value from your iPhone or mobile phone. So it's a perfect legal to do that, but if the data is very invalid very frequently, less than once a second, every second you have to invalidate, then it may not be eligible to be cached in a grid. Okay, page number 8, please. So now IBM Elastic Caching has two products available to solve the problem that I just mentioned earlier. One is an appliance version, which is called AC10 appliance, and another one is a software version called Westphalia Extreme Scale, which is WXX. So AC10 appliance version is a drop-in solution. So the WXX software is preloaded in the firmware of the appliance. So there's no need to install the software when you're using appliance version, and it only require you to hook up your appliance to the network and plugging the two wires into your private network or company network, and configure the appliance to be used as a caching server. So XC10 configuration is very simple and pretty much like a dropping out of the box. And XC10 covers 80% of the use cases that the software version, which WSS, can do. So one XC10 appliance can cache up to 240 gigabytes data. So it means that you can actually cache in about 240 gigabytes data in using the appliance version. But if additional caching or high availability is required, you may want to have more caching data. Then you can add additional XC10 appliance and add on top of that first one and to make a cluster. And we call this is actually called XC10 Appliance Collective. So you can add one or more XC10 appliance on top of it to make a collective so that it provides even better, more caching to write and also failover use cases as well. WSS software version will actually require users to install the software on their own hardware. So you will have to have some kind of hardware available, but the requirement for the hardware is not very high. As long as you have enough memory, which can be used for the caching, it's good enough. So it doesn't really have to have a very high power CPU power in order to be able to run in WSS software server, caching server there. So it's a reasonable in terms of the CPU, but you do need to have a large number of memory available so that you can use it for caching. And also, the software version can also be clustered by having one or more containers or servers and configured and clustered together and providing more memory as well as a high availability, as I mentioned earlier, in like XC10 appliance. So the software version can cover 100% of the use cases. So appliance is 80%, but a software version pretty much can cover all the use cases that we can do, and is fully customizable. Means that you could write agents, or you can write your own business logic and plug it into the server software version to provide additional use cases that you may have in your enterprise. So the size of the memory for caching is unlimited for software. It really depends on how much memory located on the AWS servers that you set up. If more memory on a server, then you are going to have more cache data to write into the system. Page number 9, please. So I mentioned XC10 version covers 80% of the use cases. So those use cases are like out of the box. Basically means that you don't really need to make any coding, but really like just configure to use it. So those are HTTP session replication, Westfield Dynamic Cache Plugin, as what Commerce has been integrated with, and the simple grid use cases, like you wanted to cache in some data in your enterprise, you can just use a simple grid API to do the caching, or ESB side cache use cases, which we're going to talk about a little bit later. So most of the use cases that I mentioned here are out of the box. It really means that you have no need to write a code, but really just need a hookup appliance and a config to be the caching server, and then your client can talk to the XC10 server to do the caching. The software version can cover all the use cases I mentioned, 100%. It can do what XC10 appliance can do, as I mentioned earlier, but additionally it supports the customization. And one example could be, you could write a custom agent to process the data based on your specific data structure to the grid, and then you can actually use the extreme skill to look up and write those extra specific objects into the system based on what the business logic you needed. So you can do a fully customization by doing virtually everything you want, even moving some subset of your business logic into the grid server and use the caching leveraging as part of your infrastructures if you want. Page number 10, please. So a study done by Forest Tail Research in February this year, and it shows that the return on investment when using Westfield Extreme Scale is 123%. And also the payback period, they found out, is 9 months. So it means that after 9 months, you can get a money back based on the investment you have put for the extreme scale. And also net present value, which is a gain value, is total about $5.9 million. So this has been done with us, one of the biggest extreme scale customers, and actually research done by the Forest. The study actually shows the saving comes from hardware and the software cost reductions, and mainly because you don't really need extra hardware software for that, and to upgrading the hardware for your database, your application server, and so on, but rather than you just adding the caching to save the hardware expense, and also maintaining cost saving as well, because there's less maintaining. You don't change your infrastructure, but you just adding and remove the caching. And the revenue grows also due to the efficiency when using Westfield Extreme Scale software. So that actually is coming from Forrester research in February this year. Page number 11. The latest version of the Extreme Scale is version 8.5. And it is released in April this year. And the equivalent version of SC10 is a version SC10 V version 2.1, which is shortly after the April. So this two versions is the latest version that extreme scale elastic caching product has been released, and a few new enhancements are added to the latest releases. And these are features are mainly focused on to the product consumability and the ease of use. So give the best user experiences. So when needed for caching. So one of the example here would like in the list here shows a great query console. So this is a new feature will allow you to using the built-in console to look up or search all the cache keys from the grid. So you can actually list all the grid keys or searching the keys. And then when you're searching the keys, and you can select them and invalidate them. So the nice thing is that this is useful when in a common situation, if you know that there's some particular store promotion or something is expired, you want to delete it right away for the caching so that it will gonna go get the real data from the backend. You can just log on to the console and search that particular key and select them and say invalidate. So that will remove those cache and that you search, you select it from the grid. So that's just one example that show you the consumability of the new enhancement we have added. Page number 12. So in the next session, next few slides, I will go through a few common usage patterns for elastic caching. Page number 13. So this is about HTTP session replications. One of the typical use cases that the caching can help for the applications. So many enterprises persist HTTP sessions in their application. For example, a registered shop person will have a persistent shopping cart and a user sessions without re-log on if one of the commerce application service is done. So there are two traditional way of making HTTP session object persist. One is to persist in the database so the application can share the HTTP sessions from the database. But the issue of this is that it requires additional database to store the sessions, as well as a low database latency may impact on the performance of the applications. So another traditional way of making session persist is to do the memory-to-memory copy among all the applications. So Westfield Application Server provides these features, but the issue is that HTTP session objects store in the same application JVM and also replicated on each application that you have in the clusters. So the problem is simple. If you have using the application JVM for objects to caching, then you have less heap used for the application, and that may impact on the application performance. So if the application needs to deal with large session objects, it may impact significantly on the applications because, large portion of the heap may have to use for store the session objects. So that's the issues too. So also replication issues. So because the memory-to-memory copy is putting the session objects on each application in a tier, and what happens is if you making invalidate the sessions, which you want to delete the caching, you are going to have to invalidate for all the applications. So invalidation may be expensive in these cases. So the first use case is here shows the elastic caching can help, which can be used to store HTTP session in the remote grid. So in this case, we only needed to have one copy of session data and share across all applications because it's the remote. The caching is remote in the grid. Since the grid is remote and it will not use application heap, right, and then make the application perform better, so when invalidating the HTTP sessions, only needed to delete it from the grid,
yeah.
So in a single places. So the invalidation will be much faster and without impacting on each application. To leverage HTTP session replication, there's no code required. So if you say you wanted to use in grid to offload HTTP session objects in the WebSphere, and what you really needed to do is config WebSphere, console to enable that features, and there's no need of coding, no required code in order to use these features to offload the HTTP session object into the grid. Page number 14, please. So this picture shows the failover and the HTTP session from one application to another application. Session objects are in the remote grid. So what happens is it's always available to all applications that connect to it. So when one application is failed in a data center, and the same session object can be failed over to the second applications without impact on the client. So when you have a shopping cart, even one application server failed in the commerce, it will just going to be transported from the user because the client will still log on and will still have a session and shopping carts available and a user profiles available on the client, and there's no impact, and the user will not realize there's something, fail over under the cover. So that's the benefits. But additionally, this same feature can also work across the data centers. So in extreme scale, we have a feature called multi-master replications, which allow you to be able to fail over the grid from one data center to another data center. So in cases one of the grid server in data center one fail, then the data center two grid will pick up and sending the session object back to the applications. So in that case, you are going to have a full tolerance and reliabilities of the cached data for the HTTP sessions. Again, the client will not realize the changes under the cover. Page number 15. So one typical usage pattern for caching is called sidecache. So the client will still follow the initial application path length to get the data initially from the backend. When the data is retrieved, the application will put the data to the grid and then return the data back to the client. So later on, when the same request coming from the client again, the application checks the cache in the grid using a cache key and return it to the client if it found it. So in that case, it will not hit in the backend anymore. So it will reduce, so sidecache will reduce application path length, therefore to improve the performance of the applications. So that's the typical sidecache usage patterns for elastic caching. Page number 16, please. So many different data can be cached using sidecache use cases. And typical use cases are like WebSphere Commerce Data Cache plugin, what we're going to talk about later. And also there's a very popular one is Enterprise Services Bus, such as WebSphere Enterprise Service Bus product, WebSphere Messaging Broker, and WebSphere Messaging Queue. And those are typical Enterprise Service Bus products, which we can integrate with as well using the sidecache approach. And they all can leverage sidecache, and most of them is no coding required. It's out of the box. This means that as a user, as long as you have the product and both product, you can just config to make a sidecache working with your use cases. And there's no coding required, and mainly is a configuration to get a connect to the grid from your ESB, for example, to get it working. Page number 17. Okay. So besides these out-of-the-box usage patterns, user can actually fully customize WXX, as I mentioned earlier. So the way that you customization is that you're using the WXX object map APIs. So in Elastic Caching APIs, we're providing the common API that the user can write their own client to cache the data, whatever the data they needed. And usually the API is and is as long as you have a client, which is WSS client, which is a couple of jars, in your class part of your client application, you can using those API very easily. So those API is really, really simple. It's really like just like hash map operations. So API for put to insert the data, API for get to retrieve the data, API update to update the value, key value of the data, and API remove to remove the key value from the grid. So those are the typical APIs that you would do in your applications if you want to do some customization to caching some of the data that you want. For non-Java clients, such as .NET, XC10 version provide a REST gateway, so that can be actually used to do the same operations as I mentioned earlier under the cover. So, but the difference is that the interface is not a Java interface because it's non-Java client. So it uses RESTful interfaces to talk to the REST services under the XC10 server, and which is Grid Server, and the Grid Server will actually map to those object API as mentioned earlier to do the operations in the grid. So it does exactly the same thing, but just a different wrap on top to handle for the non-Java client. Page number 18. So how does it look like? So this object API, map API, are dealing with the data in the grid, which is stored as a key value pairs, as I mentioned earlier. So both keys and values can be primitive types, which like integer, boolean, float, and something like that, or the compound keys, such as the classes, objects, or the user-defined objects. So as long as the objects are serializable, and then you can write those compound keys as a key or value into the object map, into the grid. So they can be stored in a grid, as long as they're serializable. So you have to make sure the object is serialized. Page number 19. So one typical use case of a sidecache, I mentioned about sidecache. So one typical use case of a sidecache is ESB, Enterprise Service Bus integration. So ESB is based on the SOA architectures. So it uses the web services to transform and exchange a message between the client and the backend. So really you see it's just SMI, SML, messaging exchange between a client and a server using the ESB as a bus. So that's usually in how it looks like. So elastic caching, which is including XC10 and WSX software version, can be added to the ESB layer and cache the results from response from the backend. So basically the instrumentation part in this particular case will be elastic caching to integrate with the ESB, but not your applications. So the benefits to do this, to integrate on ESB on this layer, is that when you do that, there's no coding. There's no code changes required from both your client and your server because you're really dealing with the XML message. And there's no changes on your backend as well as there's no change on your client. So enable that. What's happening here is that the web services XML-based message can be actually sidecached, stored in a grid. Through the ESB. So later on when you're asking for the same data, you don't really have to go to the backend anymore because it's already cached in the ESB layer, so you can just grab right away from the cache. So in this picture, it shows the cache miss case. So cache miss means that the cache is not there yet. There's no cache yet. So number one, the client makes a request to ESB. Number two, ESB checks the cache, and it is missed. So number four, ESB makes call to the backend and get the data. And number six, before the data are sent back to the client, ESP writes to the grid, so make a cache available in the grid. Page number 20. So this page shows the cache hit. So now assume the cache is already there in the grid. So when the send request is asked, number 2, ESP checks the grid and finds the cache in the grid. And number 4, ESP sends the data back to the client. So no hit to the backend. The performance is going to be improved because not only the path length is shorter, but also you save the MIPS that needs to be run under the backend, so that improve the transactions and performance at the backend as well. So by reducing the unnecessary call to the backend, enterprise can save the backend MIPS to be used for real transactions. So it will save the operational cost as well for the long run. Page 21. So IBM has a number of ESP-like products. For example, WestFair Enterprise Service Bus, I mentioned earlier, the WISP, and also WestFair Message Broker, WMB, and WestFair Message Queue, WMQ. And also there's a one appliance version of the ESP product called XI50 or XI52, which is appliance version of ESP product, which is doing very similar enterprise service bus type of operations. And all those products we've been talking about, ExtremeScale and XE10, which will support it out of the box. And most of them is no required coding. It's just hook up, config, and get it working based on use cases. So all the above ESP products are supported by us. Most of them, as I mentioned, is no code required. One example here I'm just mentioning here in the picture here, WestFair Enterprise Service Bus. So WSS provided out-of-box mediation flow. So there's a one mediation flow you can add into the flow, into the overload WSB flow, and that particular mediation flow will do the side cache of algorithm, which will be used to simply intercept the message and the side cache into the grid, and then next time we're asking for the same request, and it will check the grid to find out the key and return back to the client without hitting the backend. So the way that does is that you need to config that mediation flow to connect to XE10 or ExtremeScale host, which is a server host, and also you will need to define XPaths from that tool, WSB tool, to defining what part of the message you want to cache in the key, and what part of the message as a data that you want to cache as a value into the grid. So you just need to configure it. Once you configure it, it's just then done, then it worked. So the same thing for XI50 and 52. What I mentioned before is actually one appliance version of ESP. So that can be also configured to connect to the XE10 for caching. And the only difference is that the XI50 and the 52 does not work with a Java-based API. So we actually using a REST gateway, as I mentioned earlier, to connect from XI50-52 to XE10. But it's still doing the same algorithm, which is side cache algorithm I mentioned earlier, to caching the message into the grid and retrieve from the grid when the cache is hit. So it's similar, but it's really just a different layer. And because it's not a non-Java client, so we're using the REST API, REST gateway to integrate with it. Again, it's out of the box. There's no need to code, writing the code, but it really just config to get it working. Page number 22, please. So for WestSphere, there's another product called WestSphere Message Broker. So and that one, it's not 100% no coding. So you do need to do a small coding, which is really a few lines of a side cache algorithm, you know, as I mentioned earlier, as a Java call. So the way the message broker works is that you can plug in a compute node, and a compute nodes into the flow, and one of the compute nodes you were going to add it is going to be calling the object API, as I mentioned, to do the side cache things. So then you plug in that compute node to the flow and do the side cache. So in most of cases, what you need to do is really just need to creating a couple of compute nodes, one for insert, which is insert to the cache grid. One for retrieve, which is get cache from the grid. And sometimes you may want to invalidate as well, or update. So you may want to do the update or remove on compute node as well. But it depends on use cases. But it's simple. It's really not. It's really simple. A process, a few lines of code to do the object API call, to do the insert, put, and get. Typical and side cache algorithm. Page number 23, please. Okay, besides the side cache, so we've been talking about side cache earlier. So besides the side cache, another common usage pattern is called inline cache. And this note, this is only for WSX. So it's not SC10 features, but it is a WSS only features. So in this case, client makes a GET request to the grid. The cache is not in the grid. So WSS goes to the backend to load the data and then return the result to the client. So it was always going to go through the grid. So it's different from side cache, but this one is always going to go through the grid. And this is, in this case is called read-through cache. And the second case, it could be client makes a request to write a data to the grid. So WSS writes to the grid and then call the backend to store the data to the backend system as well, and then commit the sessions. So in this case, it's everything in one session and committed. And this is called write-through cache. And the third case is actually called write-behind. So the client writes data to the grid, and the session is committed. So it's not waiting to, sending down to the backend system, but it just commits right after that. And at some point of time, WSS wake up and call the backend to store and synchronize the data back to the backend system. So it will be an asynchronous update, which can have a better performance compared with the second use cases I mentioned earlier. So there are three different use cases could be used for this particular inline cache. And it also user can write a custom loader, as shows in the picture here, and custom loader to load data, to preload the data from the backend system as well, if you want. So you can preload the data, and then you will actually warm up first, and then your client will get the data, all the data from the grid, as long as the data is available in the grid. If it's not, then we're still going to reload again or preload it or get the data from the backend and before sending the back to the client. So that's the inline caching. Page number 24. So the third common usage patterns beyond the side cache, inline cache, is called bar cache or data grid cache. So the bar cache, use a grid as a database or backend system. So it's not really going through the grid, but it's actually treated a grid as a database because a grid providing a failover and a resilience. So simply, the grid itself can be failover between the replication and the master. So it's a pretty good one to using as a database or backend system. So in that case, all the data are stored in the grid. You only needed to send the data back to the backend system. The real backend system is when you want to have a snapshot of the data and saved into the backend system. Or if you decided to restart your grid, so it means the in-memory caching will be gone. Before you're doing that, you want to write back to the backend system and to sync back to the system before you restart the grid. So these usage patterns actually allow you to be able to write agents so that you can write pretty much all your business logics in the server side as an agent, so that you can build any business logic within a grid to support your specific use cases that you needed. So it is fully customizable, and also be able to reduce the dependency on the backend data store. Because in case if a backend failed or done, it will not going to be impacted because it was still going to get the data from the grid. So that's the introduction of WSX and XC10 in terms of elastic caching and capability. So now I'm going to turn to Michael Lee and Jim to talk about a specific topic, typical side cache approach that I've been using for WSX and XC10 and commerce integration.
All right, thank you, Paul. So I hope everybody can hear me right. And So in the following slide, I'll be covering actually part of the commerce, the Web3 commerce integration. And this actually has to do with the WXS and XC10 solutions actually can integrate with WASP to offer the caching benefits for the WASP applications, including the WCS application. So here we actually in slide 25, you will see that like we will be able to do this as a side caching model, which Paul has generally mentioned before, where the side caching model actually is that we look up for the side cache for the information, and if it's not there, then actually we'll just try to load it from the database, and then we will actually populate this cache. So using this, actually, we will also be actually using the distributed, we're using the cacheback.xml to actually populate the base cache. So the cacheback XML actually is used by the WASP application server, and then for the entries that are defined in there, actually, the WXS application will be able to pick up the same set of cache entries which are defined inside these cachebacks. And if the objects are actually defined as the distributed map interface, so we'll be also be able to leverage all the caching capabilities of all the objects with this particular interface. And all these configurations are configurable within the WASP admin console. So all these configurations could actually also either be able, you'll be able to either configure them actually through the WASP admin script or the console. So the advantages of having this is that we'll be able to scale up and down elastically on all these caching entries in the WXS cache provider. And then it also allows for failover, because the thing is, if there are failures in one of the WXS framework where there are some servers which are down, so we'll internally manage all the failover scenarios such that some of the data stored in different partitions will be failed over to the other containers in WXS. So could we move to slide 26, please? So in slide 26, you see that actually we have a scenario. So this scenario is like, for example, if a customer has a product promotion going on, and then actually like there will be a lot of hits actually on a particular application. So you see that for the generic configuration, like WebSphere Commerce will be using the standard Dynacache as the base cache. So what it will do is that on each WebSphere Commerce application server, they will be using their own internal memory to store the cache. So you see that on the right side, there will be some arrows actually pointing to each WebSphere Commerce server that they will be accessing either the cache entries from the memory, or if they configure so that it allows this offload and it fills up the memory that is being used for the in-memory cache, then it will go into this. So each of these WebSphere cluster server will be storing its own set of cache entries. So they will be duplicated across all the all the servers. So if we have a lot of new requests in a short period of time, then actually the MRM might be overloaded. And like for the allotted memory size of each of the WebSphere commerce server, actually they will need to build up their own cache. And then it actually may slow down the response time for any customer request, because each of them, even though if they are getting the same request, but they are actually redirected to different commerce server, then the response might be a little bit slower because they need to build up their own cache. So could we turn to slide 27? So in slide 27, we point out to how actually we can deploy the WXS Elastic Cache. So in a, like for this particular configuration, you see that now all the WebSphere Commerce server can access to a single, basically a single instance of the Elastic Cache, which is provided by the WXS or the XC10 servers. So because each of the server will be able to contribute to the build-up of the cache entries inside the Elastic Cache, so the population of all the cache entries will be much faster. So what that means is that if another server is trying to access like some cache entries which has not been queried before. So if any other Web3 Commerce Server has populated entries in WXS already, they would have get that readily, so without actually having a cache miss. So this particular model will allow for a faster response time for the cache query, such that the user can have a much faster response time for whatever they have queried for in the promotion access to the web page. So the faster response time apparently means happier customer. So can we turn to page 28? So in slide 28, so we'll see that it actually allows for the additional the faster addition of or the deployment of an extra Web3 Commerce server inside a cluster. So what that means is that, for example, if the Commerce cluster, if the new Commerce server being added to the cluster is using its own standard Dyna cache, then it will need to build it up from scratch. But here, if we deploy more cluster servers in this scenario, then it will be able to directly access all the cache entries already populated inside WXS. So that means there's no warm-up time at all. So they can just switch to the readily available cache, which is provided by WXS. So this allows for a much faster deployment or addition on the capacity for the Commerce clusters. So could we turn to page 29? Now, the same thing actually applies to the other side, to the reverse way of removing servers from the cluster. So in scenarios where sometimes we need to actually apply an IFIX, or we need to actually shut down a server, or we need to redeploy or recycle some servers. So when we shut down the servers, if we're using standard Dyna cache, the cache entries are generically removed together because it's in memory, then it will not be recovered after a recycle or restart. So in this case, like we have the common case of having to apply IFIXes or any other patches on some systems where we need to take the server down. So like when we are doing that, then after the restore, so it will be similar to actually adding the server back to the cluster. And then here, since we have the WXS cache entries already available, so when after the IFIX or after the patch, when we bring the server back up, so the cache entries will still be there because it's been populated before, and then the cache entries won't be gone. So all the cache entries will still be preserved over on the WXS or the XC10 side. All right? Page 29, please. We're still at page 29. Right. So the consistent user experience, what we are talking about is that the user actually wants to always have a constant or actually close to minimal amount of response time. So if the server actually is ramping up, actually there will be additional time that is needed for actually repopulating the cache entries within its own memory. That will actually take up extra CPU time. If you're tracking CPU time using some applications such as AN monitor or any other applications which can track CPU, you will notice that these CPU will consume quite a lot of CPU cycles. Like the operation will consume a lot of CPU cycles, and these CPU cycles will eat up into the response time. So now we actually can go to slide 30. All right, so slide 30 actually talks about the reduced warm-up time for a full restart. So other than the fact that actually we just take one or some of the servers down, so for example, if we need the whole full site restart, or there are times actually we need to refresh all the cache entries inside WXS. Actually, because the thing is, all the commerce servers will subsequently still contribute to the rebuild, to the rebuilding of all the cache entries on the WXS side. So what it will do is that it will speed up, will still speed up the time that it needs to populate all the cache entries over on the WXS side. So it ends up that the customer will still get a much faster response time overall after the rebuilding of the cache entries. So slide 31, please. So Web3 Commerce Server Extreme Scale, you'll see that it will be able to offload some of these cache entries to the Elastic Cache from the Commerce Servers. However, actually, it doesn't mean that it is all or nothing caching model. So what that means is that, like, other than the non-cacheable objects on the left side, you can see on the chart. So, like, using standard dynamic caching, we can still selectively pick certain objects and types of objects to be cached internally, still on the local system. But the thing is, you can see the advantage of having some of these entries actually offloaded to the WXS cache model, such that less memory will be used in this case. So page fragments, commands in extreme scale can significantly reduce the memory requirements here, because the thing is, otherwise, if you have a 16-server cluster, so all the, like, for example, if each of them actually uses 4 gigabytes to store the cache, and then these 4 gigabytes of cache space, which is stored in WXS, will be offloaded to the external caching, which is stored by WXS or XC10s. So you don't need to use as much memory to store all these cache entries inside the commerce server. Apparently, the same thing applies to this offload cases, where if you are using this offloads, because the thing is, there's not enough memory to store all the cache entries, or you would like to actually allot more memory for your operational needs in your commerce server, then it will help in that regard for the amount of memory required in the commerce server. So could you move to slide 32, please? So what does commerce really cache? Commerce can cache a few different types of entries. So you see on the right side of the chart on the top, so there are some caching frameworks. It talks about it can cache commands, it can cache servlets, it can cache web services objects, and then it can also cache some pure Java objects. But most of these things actually are well-defined in the WASP application admin console under the resource cache instances definition. So, for example, JSP and page fragments, they are stored under the servlet cache instance definition, and commands are stored under the servlet cache instance. And these two types of objects are actually very well suited for storing actually in WXS. And the other type of object caches that also could be stored are distributed maps, but they are stored in a different location under the WASP console. That you can see that under resource cache instance, they are stored under the object cache instance. So you see that on the right side in the diagram. So from the top, you can see that we have the dynamic cache APIs and the frameworks which will access the lower layer, which is the cache provider. So this cache provider could actually redirect all these caching algorithms to different providers. For example, like the standard dynamic cache provider, which is a default on the bottom left side, and on the bottom right side, there's the WebSphere Extreme Scale dynamic cache provider, which could be configured through the admin console. I'll go through that a little bit later on the slides. And slide 33, please. So on slide 33, you see that generically, we are caching some stuff actually in the page in the base cache. So if you're using the WebSphere, if you're using the WebSphere Commerce configuration, so the cacheback.xml generically should be already defined. And for store objects, they will be actually stored under the source. That there's a directory under stores. Well, usually most of the cachebacks are stored under the web INF directory, and the name will be the cacheback.xml. So on top of the stores objects, right, there will be initialization server objects too. So they're stored in their own web INF cacheback.xml. There are other additional cachebacks that you can define for the other WAR files that you can actually specify what has to be stored inside it. And all these things generically will go to the base cache. Now, if you are doing the data caching, which are the cache for some of the database query results that you want to actually cache. There are two different ways of doing this. So one of them is to do with the configuration of the cache back. So it will allow the customizations on what to be cached. But if you're using cache instance.properties file, which it is stored under also the webmin classes directory, so this one actually will store everything not to the base cache, but to a distributed map core, WC distributed map cache. So the customization is more flexible using the cache back. So, but the two ways of doing the same thing. But bear in mind that they store in a different cache. Now, for marketing data, the marketing data will be stored also in a distributed map, and so does the DOM integration. The DOM integration also actually can store price and inventory data through a distributed map, and using the price rule, the price rule actually has another distributed map called PL cache. So on the right side, you see that actually it's a snapshot of the cache instance.properties file. So you can define further cache instances to map to the cache entries that actually you want to store. So you see that, for example, on the right side, cache instance.5 actually defined the name for the cache instance, and then you can define size, and also you can configure different like attributes and parameters for this particular cache instance. So you can see things like this offload and flush to disks and all these other configurations that you can further define for these cache instances. Can we go to slide 34, please? So the integration of WXS and XC10 to WebSphere is pretty trivial. If you're actually running through the installation wizard, actually, it will actually, in one of the screens, it will tell you that you can select an option to integrate WXS or like the XC10 client with the WAS application, with the WAS server that's actually already installed. So after you install the WXS clients, the other thing to check is that to ensure all the objects that you're trying to store are serializable, because at the back end, actually, we must be able to serialize all the data for storage. Then, actually, we need to create a catalog service domain. And then here on the right side, you see that this is actually a snapshot from a screen on the container settings that would allow each of the server to choose which service provider for caching that we are using. So in the middle part, actually, you see that there's a cache provider here. We just need to switch it from the default, which is the standard Dynacache that we are using, to this WebSphere Extreme Scale provider. So this provider option will automatically show up once you installed the WXS client, and just be reminded that it must be set up as an integrated WXS with WebSphere application server, because otherwise WXS could actually be deployed on its own standalone deployment, so it won't be integrated into WAS if you don't select that option. So the other thing which is crucial in here is that there's a checkbox actually beneath the cache size that is being specified there, which is the enable cache replication. This checkbox must be checked for WXS integration to work. So going to slide 35. All right, so there's some considerations for using WXS and XC10. So so WXS and XC10 is actually like it's quite capable. It can store a lot of cache entries. So it's particularly optimized for a lot of like for a lot of transactions and a lot of cache entries to be stored. And so there are actually different types of applications that could help you collect some of these statistics. So one of the applications that that is shown on the right side actually is something called the extended cache monitor. So this is a WAS application that could be installed into a cluster to look into each of the cluster servers on the memory, on the cache requirements and the amount of cache entries and some of the other information that you can see from the cache. So if there are sufficient or there's a critical mass of cache entries to be used, it is more optimized for the use of WXS and XC10. So other than the number of entries in the base cache that you can see in there, on the top, actually, you can see that you can switch to the different cache instances such that you can inspect also on the requirements for the other cache instances, which are defined earlier, as you've seen in the cache instance properties file. So you can also see the other configurations you have configured in there to verify that they're doing the right things that you expect them to do. For example, this offload and replications configurations. And the other thing which is crucial for the determination is the frequency and the necessity of data invalidation. So if there are a lot of data invalidations, actually, it may have overhead on the performance on the on the queries, because the thing is the data will keep on refreshing, and that means that there will be extra writes in and the extra updates on the cache entry content. So if there are actually a lot of invalidations, actually there will be other considerations that we have to make for optimizing the system performance. So these information will be useful in determining whether it is actually optimized for using WXS and XC10 in the integration scenario. So could we go to slide 36? All right, so slide 36, please. Yeah. So slide 36 there are actually more information we would like to get to in order to also determine some other aspects of whether the integration is beneficial or not after integrating with WXS or XC10. So one of the major factors is that we want to look into also the CPU percent utilization. So generally, at the beginning, if we are starting code from a code cache, then when we need to actually populate data from scratch, then we need to collect all these information such that we know that actually we are not overutilizing the CPU for caching purposes. And also, there are other things that actually that could be noted in terms of response time, which is crucial for the user experience, and number of transactions and throughput of data. So on the right side, you see that actually we are using something called rational performance test tools that will be able to help capture some of this information if we actually build a test scenario, which actually can access different pages on the commerce server. So there are other toolings actually which I've mentioned before. So Nmon actually can help monitor CPU, and there are WS admin scripts which can also help monitor historic data, which is similar to what we have seen earlier in the extended cache monitor. So slide 37, please. So actually, customers who should consider using and adding elastic caching are high volume customers. So if you are getting a lot of transactions and a lot of volumes and a lot of hits onto the website and the application, so it really actually speeds up the warm up time for the cache population, and also it provides a faster response time because you get to the cache entries much faster instead of having more misses. So customers also with a large number of JVMs actually are beneficial because of the scalability issue regarding the amount of in-memory caching requirements for either the space or actual RAM that is needed for each server. And customers with frequently updated pages and fragments are also beneficial because the thing is the updates will be done in a central location in WXS where everything is internally managed. So it actually requires less hassle for each of the commerce server to update their own cache. Also, customer with cache consistency and all shoppers will see the same page because they're sharing the same, basically the same cache instance in WXS. Slide 38, please. So primary benefits, actually just to recapture, so we have a significant reduction in the average response time for a faster population of the cache. And also there will be less fluctuations in the response time because it will be a little bit faster if to actually populate all the cache entries. And also there will be a significant improvement in the time for steady states. So steady state usually means that we'll get to a steady state CPU instead of like spending most of the CPU time for populating the cache at the beginning. And also fast recovery time we've talked about before. And the rest, I think you can actually read from the slides. Generally, there are a few other advantages. Basically, there are a lot of advantages for using the WXS cache because it will increase the capacity and the warm-up time. So that's the major advantage you can use with WXS. So slide 39. Slide 39, actually, we have actually a few links in there. So in developer works, actually, we'll cover actually how to configure Web3 Commerce with the Extreme Scale. So this will provide you a lot more details on top of some of the stuff that I've mentioned about. So in the Red Book, integrating Web3 Commerce with the XC10, so you see that we have actually a more detailed description of the XC10 configurations and what has to be done actually or how it's configured. And scalable integrated solution for elastic caching. So also there's another Red Book for it that you can go through. So page 40, please. So there are some additional Web3 product resources that actually you may be able to get to. So I'll actually hand back the time to David. Just that actually he will be able to go through this a little bit.
Thank you, Michael, Jim, and Paul, for a great presentation. And finally, don't forget to connect with us. Be notified about upcoming webcasts related to the product and topics discussed today by subscribing to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange mailing list. Simply send an email to wsehelp@us.ibm.com with the subject of WSTE Subscribe to get a list of mailing lists and to subscribe. Also, if there is a topic that you would like to see scheduled, or if you have any comments that would help us improve our future webcasts, please let us know at that same email address. You could also connect with us through our Facebook page and our Twitter account. Talk to us and let us know how we can make this program better for you. We welcome any ideas you may have. At this time, Jackie, we'd like to open up the lines for questions.
One moment, please, for your first question. Sang Moon, your line is open.
Hello, this is Sang Moon from Web3 Commerce L2 support. I just recently handled a PMR using Extreme with Commerce in a distributed cache topology with a pessimistic lock strategy, which means that their near cache in the Web3 Commerce process should be disabled. However, they're seeing over 100 megabytes worth of base map objects still being instantiating and persisting. Is this normal, or should they? I thought with that configuration topology, they should have virtually no base map objects in the Web3 Commerce process running, persisting at all.
Hi, Sang. This is Jim Krieger. Yes, I am at least familiar with that. That issue and what I believe is happening in that case is that if the remote cache is not configured properly on one of the Commerce servers with the version that particular customer is using, they will default to a local cache, and I believe that's what's happening. They would still be seeing entries going into the remote cache, but their local cache would on that particular server would be getting items. I think that's what's happening. If you can send me the logs, we could take a look.
Would there still be a local cache when they disable the near cache?
It's not a matter of using the pessimistic lock to do the pessimistic locking to avoid the typical extreme scale near caching. What happens there is that they actually get a Dynacache. Extreme-scale Dynacache local, whether they have pessimistic locking or not.
Yeah, the Commerce has a configuration allowed to decide what needed to put into remote grid.
Yeah, it's not a Commerce thing, though. It's actually if they don't have their configuration right to like if the box isn't checked to do replication, etc. And if they do that on a specific Commerce server. That particular server will have a local Dynacache for the version that this customer is using.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
And we had no further questions.
Thank you, Jackie. At this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation, and we hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange website. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Michael, Jim, and Paul, for presenting today.